Clustered Conversations. Clustered Conversations by Weka.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Clustered Conversations. I'm Josh.
And I'm Bob. And today we are joined by Astera Labs. We got two of our favorite people. We got Michael, who's been with us for quite a while. We've known him for a long time at a different function.
Indeed.
And Avinash, who I've just met recently. So welcome.
Hello. Say hello. Introduce yourselves, guys. Who are you?
Hello. Michael Ocampo. I am a product manager at Astera Labs. And my function right now is just focused on the ecosystem alliance. Mm-hmm. So that's why I like to reach out to you folks and talk about your file system and your data platform and, discuss, how we can actually help each other out. As far as me, in my former life, I was more in the actual system design. I was a product manager over at Supermicro, working on flash systems. And so that's the intersection with Weka. And that's how I know Bob. Just meeting Josh for the first time in person. But I've known about your data platform for quite a while, since the beginning, actually. I was working behind the scenes. And it's been awesome to observe your journey thus far to this point. Before that, I was in infrastructure as a service, doing a lot of system integration, also touched some software as a service solutions. And so, that's a little bit who I am.
Yep. Michael was the guy who got us access to the labs at Supermicro way back in the day and let us test some very cool equipment. So that was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
And I always appreciate it because I got to play on Gen 4 stuff because of this guy before it ever came to market.
That's right.
Super. All right.
And Avinash?
I'll go. This is Avinash Sharma. I work as a head of field application engineer for North America teams at Astera Labs. I also do a lot of system engineering performance work also at Astera Labs. In my past life, I spent about 2 decades in Silicon Valley, aging myself a little bit here. But prior to Astera Labs, I was at Ampere Computing.
Okay.
Built a field apps team there. I enabled the product enablement for some of the early customers with the ARM CPU and data center.
Nice.
Previously, before that, I was at Intel in the sales and marketing group and enabling proof of concept for AI accelerators, different workload testing across cloud service providers. And prior to that, I spent time with programmable technology, networking, switches, PHYs, storage. Yeah.
So. You've been going up and down the stack, haven't you?
Pretty much, yeah. I've been around there. Everybody. Yeah, so that's what I do. And this is the first introduction with Weka, played with a lot of proof of concepts on data center clusters, storage clusters, file systems, all sorts of computing clusters and whatnot.
Awesome.
Sweet.
Yeah.
Good stuff. Yeah.
So what does Astera Labs do? I mean, I know, other than partner with us, right?
Do you want to go? Yeah.
Take that. Yeah. So we're primarily a silicon company. We build purpose-built data and connectivity solutions. And I think the main point is to help remove bottlenecks throughout the data center, whether it's compute, memory, or networking. And the way that we're doing that is, specific, silicon solutions for CXL, PCIe, as well as Ethernet.
Okay.
So our founding team and our architects are part of the CXL consortium, contributing members, as well as on the PCIe SIG. So doing a lot of work there. Nice. And that's kind of where I'm also helping, is not just on the software and marketing, go-to-marketing enablement, but also interoperability. So working with, for CXL, for example, it's a memory solution, right? Mm-hmm. So working with folks like, obviously, Intel and AMD, leveraging their new platforms that they've announced formally with Genoa as well as Sapphire Rapids. And so those platforms, of course, support CXL 1.1. And so beyond that, of course, we have to work with the memory vendors, the popular ones that come to mind, right? Hynix.
Yeah.
you know, Samsung, Micron. So,
yeah. So where, I guess I know the question, answer, but I just ask you, where have I run into your chips in the past in, you know, in the infrastructure I'm working with today?
Probably if you're anywhere in the cloud, some of the cloud hyperscalers, they are using it to extend the reach to make their infrastructure more reliable with the endpoints, be it network or storage or be it a GPU. So probably we are sitting in that data path to make it more robust. So you probably encountered there. Also, you encountered them in systems, which probably are either white boxed or they're from the ODMs. So we enable quick time to market using our technology because it just speeds up the adoption. As the gens change from 3 to 4 to 5, and these problems are going to get bigger and bigger. And so that's where you'll see us sometime behind the scene, inside the box. So.
Yeah, when you say fixing the problems, what kind of problems are you guys seeing that you're enabling sort of resolution?
Yeah, so as PCI Express becomes very popular and has been a very popular I/O standard for the data center in the server space, as you're going from generation to generation, from Gen 3 to Gen 4 transition, the signals are trying to travel as fast as possible, as wide as possible on the networks, as well as on the motherboards and stuff. And as you're going there, the losses that are there in the system, they're becoming higher and higher as you're traveling faster, as you're trying to push the bits faster to the endpoints to improve the reliability of retransmission of the signal and fleet management of the systems as well. So those are the problems today the data center customers are feeling, seeing, enterprise customers are seeing, that to how to reliably operate an endpoint within host processors and still meet the time to market, still continue to adopt newer, faster generation drives, networks, and all of the IOs.
And not end up with packet loss or data loss or dropped bits here and there.
Bit flips or like high signal to noise.
Correct.
Where you're having like significant issues and you're just getting transmissions to work period. Like I remember very early like PCIe, like external networking, right? When that was first kind of becoming a thing and a concept. And it was very, very challenging to get something that was stable. And oftentimes it kind of came down to the cable, right? It wasn't plugged in quite all the way, or it was just barely too long, or you really should have closed the door to the rack because that actually serves a purpose sometimes.
All of them is true, absolutely true. Yeah. So I think as we go into generations, these things are changing.
We can keep coming back to this as the importance of compute, that as more data is being generated, as things are getting faster, it's keeping that flow going. And every time you have to stop and retransmit or reset, it slows things down and makes it longer and longer.
It's terrible for the gas mileage when you stop and start again.
Yeah.
Roundabouts are way better.
I mean, as a system designer, you know, you mentioned me giving you access to some of our lab equipment before things came out. And, you know, at Supermicro, we looked at Weka as a partner and a customer. So the last thing we want was for our partner to have a bad experience as they're, you know, getting their software validated. So there's a lot of things that happen behind the scenes, right? A lot of people, they take, not necessarily you guys, but people take PCIe, NVMe, GPU for granted.
Right.
It's just supposed to work, right? But there's a lot of things that system designers and firmware engineers and, you know, motherboard designers, backplane designers, that they look at from top to bottom, starting from, you know, analog to, you know, digital, you know, what's the loss, and, you know, those things can be a moving target as workloads are applied to these systems. So thermals come to mind, things like that.
Well, you can always tell by a block diagram of a motherboard which one's made by somebody who actually uses it and the other one is made by somebody who wants to save money for the company. You can absolutely tell the difference in the two. We've seen a couple.
Absolutely. Yeah. When you have nice, like everything's laid out really well, you've got
balanced
lanes across everything, and then you have other ones like, well, it looks like they favored.
Why would
that
you put
socket?
All the drives on socket one and put the network on socket two?
Couldn't you spread that out just a little bit?
Yeah. Also, another place we see a lot of good good feedback is when the systems are up and running in the data center, mm-hmm. things start to kind of, the link starts to get deteriorated. You start mm-hmm. seeing performance degradation mm-hmm. as they're running over the number of time. Nobody wants to take the servers down or offline. That's time lost.
Exactly.
So we pack in things like fleet management features as well, which is first to the industry. Mm-hmm. So what allows you to do is, like, while the systems are running, you can preemptively see certain lanes going to start misbehaving. Mm-hmm. And then you can preemptively decommission the drive or start improving and training these things again. So mm-hmm. it essentially gives you insights before the problem's going to happen. So you can plan your shutdowns, you can plan your offline maintenance and things like that, which at a hardware level, at such a lower level, was not really being looked after. And I think once we started introducing and making people aware about it,
yeah.
they started appreciating it. Like, yeah, this is a problem that we face, and glad we have some solution out there now.
I think we were just talking about this just recently.
I'm just thinking about this in terms of when I used to be an admin, and like, you'd have a drive in a certain slot just constantly
failing,
quote unquote, fail. And it's like, well, this is the fourth drive I put in there in a week. Why does it keep failing? And it's like, oh, well, it was actually the backplane, or it was actually something else. It, actually being able to diagnose that it was an internal component or the actual, like, pathing that was at issue instead of the component itself. That's very different.
So does it report back to the BIOS? Is it reporting to the VAR log or...
So you could...
Bluetooth?
In the cloud.
In the cloud.
So we have these telemetry features, and we have a very robust and feature-rich SDK. And these SDKs are quite capable through APIs to be integrated in a BMC.
Okay.
And this concept of firmware-first, OS-first, or both. Mm-hmm. And you can notify it depending on the gravity of the problem you have. So depending on how severe the problem is, you can have your board management controller take a reaction to what's happening out there, or notify the OS and say, hey, this is something the hypervisor or the OS is going to deal with it. So we have abstracted the complexity, what you'll have to go rifle through the logs, and now instead mm-hmm. that is pushed up through the APIs in the BMC or in BIOS.
So would that enable, like, to be actually able to identify, say, misbehaving, like, DIM modules in a more predictive, faster fashion, rather than maybe, like, having to run memtest multiple times? I only see this weird error every once in a while, so I have to, like, really stress out the memory in order to get there. Could that help with that sort of thing? Those are always, in my mind, some of the more challenging, like, resolutions on hardware.
Josh, I don't know if it was a segue to CXLM.
No, it really wasn't. Like, I was just literally like, my friends, like,
just thinking about
some of the conversations.
It's a happy segue into our memory controller, but all the goodness that we have today on our PCI retimers, mm-hmm. that whole telemetry fleet management feature get carried over to the memory controller as product as well.
Nice job, Josh.
Yeah. Those on the queue. But all those features are part of our SDK that goes with our memory controller as well, which is in CXL. Mm-hmm. So we not only look at our PCI Express or the CXL link that's between the root port and our controller, but also on the memory side and data center customers and enterprise customers love RAS. So we enable all the standard RAS, but that's where we step in and do a bit more than what's out there. Is the memory training part, the memory test that you mentioned, to mm-hmm. ensure where the correctables errors happening and where some of them uncorrectable, which is going to be more catastrophic. And then you start profiling them and notifying these guys. All through the APIs, so it's much higher level of abstraction what guys are, so you're not dealing all the way down in the plumbing. Mm-hmm. You abstract it quite at a higher level. So all those feature-rich SDKs are available as well for a memory controller.
Yeah, that's great.
These are like problems that we now see because we've gone to micro components, right? Everything's kind of shrunk quite a bit. Mm-hmm. I remember in the old days of the macro components, we had one of the companies I worked for that as drives got faster and the RPMs got faster, no one thought about the vibrations that would happen that would cause the little latch to come undone.
Good old harmonics.
At some point, drives would just start popping out. So you had to just go by and push them in every once in a while.
So I was just watching a video on YouTube from a NASA when they had the space shuttles up. And they were testing, like, well, what's the best way for a human to interact with a computer in space in zero gravity? And eventually they started using, like, one of the original Macintoshes, where it was, you know, essentially touchpad became this is the best way to do it, but they were trying, like, trackpads, like ball mice, some interesting, weird, like gyroscopic sort of thing. But what sort of dropped me on that, you know, hit the latch to eject was the, remember the old Macintosh just had a mechanized ejection.
Yes.
Where it would actually launch it out a little bit. Well, in zero gravity, that little launching out a little bit, it doesn't just like kind of tick it out so you can easily grab it. It launches it out. Like they would have to catch it in mid-space as it was flying across the shuttle.
That is, well, now we got the problem with bits getting flipped as they're going across PCI buses through memory.
Correct. So. Exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, darn solar flares.
Going back to like, you know, object storage or like hard drives and fans causing issues. I remember going through those things and sending data from one host to another, and yeah, the fans mattered a lot.
Yeah.
And the customers will say, hey, why is this fan tuned down to 13.5 KRPM? And you know, they want to squeeze out more juice out of it. So then we have to, you know, as a system designer, you got to listen to those kind of feedback and say, oh, what can we do to fine tune it to squeeze more out of it? And so, tune it to, I think for that particular product, we fine tuned it to like 14.9K, which is kind of non-standard.
This doesn't scream like a Banshee nearly enough. But I can tolerate standing near this system. This is unacceptable.
But yeah.
It's important to get the airflow across the boxes, but it's also important to make sure it doesn't shake itself out of the screws on the shelf as well.
Yeah.
When you have like, I think like the Big Twin had like the two power supplies and then four other fans on there, plus all the CPU fans. So you get, you know, all these different things spinning at different
rates. Yeah.
Yeah.
Different directions.
Every single system SKU would have a fan that came with it. And so a lot of the field application engineers will say, why does this one have a different fan than the other one? So, well, the use case is different per model.
Yeah. Those little things that we don't think about when we buy something until you actually have to really look at it.
Yeah, right.
I'm glad somebody does.
Right, yeah. Yeah. Happily, someone is actually looking at this and paying attention.
Yeah, and going back to, you know, the actual industry challenge right now, you know, going from PCIe Gen 4 to Gen 5, it's almost unavoidable to require a signal conditioning solution that we've developed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're almost doubling the speed again.
Not just almost.
And yeah, we'll double it again in a few months as well. Yeah. We're going to 5 to 6 in the next few years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. We were talking about that. The Gen 5 Samsung drive is going to, I think the spec was 13 gigabytes per second. It's like, how are you going to pull the data out of that thing?
That's a lot of signaling happening very, very quickly.
And four of those to one 400 gig card, right? It's going to be unreal. I mean, the amount of data processing we have to do to get that from one point to another.
Yeah.
That amount of data. Right now for us, that would take pretty much four Gen 3 systems to get to that performance. Mm-hmm. And now it's going to take one exactly, Gen 5 right? system to get that performance.
Yeah, so that brings up a good point. And that's kind of why we wanted to come onto the podcast, because, you know, people look at it as like a necessary, you know, critical part, but it's actually unlocking a lot of potential, right? You know, the CEO of Supermicro and AMD, they were interviewed by Next Platform, and they were talking about green computing.
Yeah.
And so if you're able to, you know, squeeze more performance out at a lower, you know, power consumption,
right,
you know, that's becoming very critical for not just our industry, but for our own power grid.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Recently, we were just talking about the new NVIDIA chips, right? Yeah. That there's 700
watts to that HSM2 module on the new H100.
And if you're not keeping those things fed, and if you're not going across that backplane from the data set into there and out constantly and cleanly, you're wasting all that power. Yeah. Right.
And even with the power comes heat.
Right.
Right.
Oh, geez.
And with the heat, as I'm sure everyone knows, this is common knowledge, of course, when electronics get hot, they signal worse.
Yeah.
Right. As the temperatures go up, you have more and more issues. So I imagine that's going to necessitate even more sort of conditioning, and probably what you guys would be fairly good at, right, is allowing a processor or a system to run at what would be kind of considered more nominal temperature without having to have exotic cooling to keep it in a lower temperature.
Yeah, I'd say comfortably we are paving the path for retimer solutions, which is called Aries, which is supporting PCIe Gen 5. So it's already widely adopted. So we're pretty excited to be at the front end, tip of the spear.
That's awesome. Nice. Yeah, I can't wait to start playing with more Gen 5 systems.
Right. So. Yeah, absolutely. Once they start actually hitting the market in mass, that's gonna be fun.
Yeah, we're gonna keep testing them until they let us.
Until we get in the lab.
Yes, until we get in the lab.
We'll call our friends.
Yeah.
How can we make this go faster?
Yeah. So I mean, we've been working with the Supermicro product for a while. I know your retimer is in a couple of the one boxes that we utilize at this point. So that's why that very dense platform that we love, the Big Twin, gives us so much great performance in such a small footprint, right? So that's been one of our favorite boxes to work with.
Yeah, and the nice thing about that solution is it gives you more rack space. And with more rack space, you can fit, you know, more spindle drive storage, which is probably not something you want to hear, but it can enable that. Once you have so much throughput from your flash, now you can have cheap and deep storage in the same rack.
Yeah.
So your dollar per terabyte or even dollar per, you know, throughput.
Yeah. For us, it's a dollar per IOP or a dollar per.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. We want to make sure that they help the customers understand that you can get a lot more in a much more dense footprint, and you don't need to have everything on flash. Even though we would love to put everything on flash, but obviously having a giant object store is a lot easier to manage sometimes, right? Because now you can use it for multiple purposes, but especially you've now got a multi-petabyte system, but you're never using the entire 3-4 petabytes at the same time. So you know that like 100 terabytes, 500 terabytes is of the data set that you're going to be utilizing will always live in flash when you need it.
Yeah. Just be careful when you're rolling those racks around full of, you know, 90 drive dense rack. Those sort of systems, you know, when your rack itself is now 3,500 plus pounds on casters on a raised floor designed for maybe less than that.
Also, don't build your data center on the second floor, because if you put too many disks, the floor starts to bow.
Exactly. Yeah. And make sure your elevator is rated for whatever you're throwing into it, so you don't accidentally have 6 inches of lip that now you have to try and get your rack out of, because as you were moving data centers, you had a little whoopsie doodle.
This has never happened to either of us.
No, not once. Not once.
I don't think that would be the problem for CXL memory, though.
No.
But the problem you just described with like object storage is kind of the vision for CXL memory, right? Because today with 1.1, it's about expansion, and then it's about sharing. And as the CXL spec and the product becomes available for support for CXL 3.0, then you'll see even more heterogeneous infrastructure. You won't have any bowing of the floor, but you'll have a lot more memory available that can be basically pooled and shared across multiple hosts without compromising
like actual networked memory.
That's what CXL is designed to do.
That's going
to
be fascinating.
Like at reasonable speed, or like I was thinking, like, you know, my mind is immediately going straight to Ethernet, InfiniBand, and then maybe vaguely kind of PCI networking, where you have kind of issues with signaling and cable distance and such. Is CXL going
to? I think it's too early to tell. I mean, we have to run those tests. We're really focused on delivering value today through our memory expansion solution, which is called Leo. So Astera Labs, right? We're our product names are based around like constellations. So
Aries and Leo. Yeah. Good now.
Suddenly it makes sense.
But yeah, I mean, we'll see.
Next up's the Big Dipper. Hope not.
Good thing you're not part of our marketing team.
I am not a marketeer.
But Michael brings up a good point that with this whole advent of CXL, I think it's just going to unlock new architectures. At the system level, also, people are going to start thinking, like, quickly, it's tantalize you to think about network. And I think CXL is just getting started. Mm-hmm. And along with Astera Labs, is just getting started.
And I think it actually fits in the DPU model quite well, right? So now you have the memory as a central piece that you have the DPUs around, and they can start feeding off that. It gets to be an interesting model to build.
Are we bringing open systems back to like mainframe methodology here? Where you
it all comes back to the same spot.
We see from the customers, to your point, like all the compute is surrounding either memory or memory is trying to surround the compute. And today there's just the scale out of what the CPU vendors are announcing, be it x86 or ARM guys, mm-hmm. the number of cores are just massively scaling.
Oh, yes.
And memory is not able to keep up with it. And if you see the workloads, be it AI or ML or mm-hmm. the traditional in-memory database object store, they all just want data as close as possible to them. And CXL is a great way, at least the type 3 devices that we are coming up with mm-hmm. are bringing more memory closer to the CPUs or processing unit per se. Mm-hmm. And the Leo controller is one that just enables you to add up to 2 terabytes of memory per controller. So you got what you got with your CPUs, and then you got this additional capability based on your the CXL slots to just pull in more memory. What that's going to do is just going to compete for that chassis space that mm-hmm. you got. And so far, what we heard from all the customers, like block storage has kind of found its way disaggregated and post. Mm-hmm. I think the first step is like, hey, let's pack in more memory closer and then eventually decompose memory as well out of the rack, amongst the racks. So I think a lot of new system architecture is going to start showing up.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's like the old joke is we only have a mainframe. We just took the pieces and moved it outside. Keep the same computer, just keep moving the pieces out.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, that's because that gives you a lot more architectural freedom by taking the memory out of it. Now you can spend more time, as long as you have the same pathing, right? And no matter how fast your CPU is, how many mm-hmm. gigahertz you have, if you can't get the memory mm-hmm. to move the data in and out, mm-hmm. you have nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. There's only so much cache on those in the silicon, right? Yeah. You only fit physically so much. So, process is going to get better and better, but there's still only a couple, maybe 100 millimeter of a chip that you could reliably make.
But that cache is really designed for one or two operations, right? It's mm-hmm. not designed for that
millimeter. Yeah, to run through an entire workload and working set.
Yeah. And bringing all those workloads, it's going to evolve the system architectures. In our opinion, I think we've already started seeing the advent of how this memory is decomposing the systems. Mm-hmm. At the same time, what other compute engines are coming out, standard general purpose compute, specialized compute. And also now you're starting to tier the memory. You're starting mm-hmm. looking at tiering memory, what traditionally used to be cache, mm-hmm. which paid the highest dollars per mm-hmm. megabytes maybe.
Yeah.
And then now you have the gigabytes and terabytes of DRAM.
Right.
Now you're jumping to flash and the spinners, but now you're starting to insert a new tier of memory, which you are over sealed to DRAM. So I think it unlocks a lot of new architectures and ways for the application developers to think about how to utilize this.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because if you have multiple tiers of memory, now you can even disaggregate the way you do your memory management, right? Some data needs to be fast, some data needs to be stored for long periods of time and mm-hmm. read in.
Yeah. I mean, eventually that could just turn into like turning large, disaggregated, distributed namespaces considered as memory because the access method, the underlying, networking, PCIe, et cetera, to it is going to be maybe just off of what like the normal memory speed is.
Well, I remember we used to talk about in the tens of milliseconds for operations to happen. Mm-hmm. And we talked about milliseconds. Now we're talking microseconds. We're getting down to nanoseconds.
Mm-hmm. I run my tests all based on nanoseconds and I'm competing for the slowest one. So it's shrunk quite a bit and I guess it's shrinking even further. The
goals. Yeah, that's a signal.
For us at storage, we're very happy with microseconds right now. So.
Yeah, right. Not too long though. It could reasonably be measured.
Well, we're in the double digits. Microseconds now, which is fantastic.
We are, right. Yeah.
So we're getting closer and closer to nanoseconds.
And that's only on PCIe 4. With 5, it'll be even better. Yeah.
My boss wouldn't be happy at double digit nanoseconds.
Well, that makes sense. Oh, every one of the steps, you introduce more latency, right? Correct. And the mm-hmm, bigger the data set, the longer the latency. So.
And the certain workloads, I think even the workloads as they become more agnostic some of them are agnostic to latencies because they are done in batches. And
right.
They were like, hey, we're not real time, but there are some real time ones which are really latency sensitive. Some of them are just looking to expand the bandwidth. If you look in the HPC workloads, mm-hmm. I don't think they are gunning for the capacity that to pull the data closer, but they're just looking at how wide of a data set can I pull in the DRAMs. So I think a lot of new architecture on the horizons, and this is exciting for us at Astera Labs to enable those architectures, have this conversation, be part of those system designs. Yeah.
Well, we're happy to work with you guys, see what, where it goes in the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Memory and storage and moving data is a passion of ours, and it, you know, makes up the faster we can get to it, the faster better. The faster we can make our customers happy.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Right. Cool.
Sweet. Well, yeah. Thanks, guys, for joining us.
Oh, this is fantastic.
Yeah, thanks for hosting us.
Yeah. So.
Thank you. All right. For Cluster Conversations, I'm Bob.
And I'm Josh.
Thanks for coming.
Talk to you later.